I'm Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is a Making It Grow Extra, one of our podcasts, and I'm with, and I think I can say this safely because, no, I can't, because I have more than one favorite professor, but one of my favorite professors is here today, John Nelson, who's retired from being the curator at the A.C. Moore Herbarium at the University of South Carolina, and he taught field botany courses, along with other things, and I got to take a class with him. Most wonderful class. And John still is kind enough occasionally to let me take a walk with him. We're talking today about Carolina Bays, which we've done a preview of. We've made one podcast already, and so if you want the background, go and listen to that one. And for this one, John, just give us a quick overview of what we said about where they are and that they were formed by forces of nature.
The bays in the are called Carolina Bays because most of the ones that we know about are in the two Carolinas, but they do actually stretch from Maryland down into southeastern Georgia. And these are geomorphic features which are generally looked at as wetlands because they hold water at least for a certain part of the year. And they have a very characteristic shape that's easy to recognize from aerial photography, so that these are elliptical features, elliptical depressions actually, on the Earth's surface, which have largely a northwest, southeast demarcation. That is, they look like ellipses that are all sort of lined up parallel to each other, with that long axis forming a line from the northwest to the southeast.
And the current belief or explanation seems to be that it's happened because of wind pushing the soils and the soil types.
Right. It's an aeolian origin that
is
dependent on ancient wind patterns.
Okay, just like aeolian harps, which
yes.
need the wind to make them play. All right. So is there, you said they're scattered, but majority North and South Carolina, but and in the coastal zone?
Right, in the coastal plain.
Okay.
You don't find them in the Piedmont.
Okay.
So, sorry, Piedmont. But, well, you can find variants of Carolina Bays, not many of them, in South Carolina in places like Saluda and Edgefield County, and they call them high ponds.
Okay.
Or high ponds.
Well, let's stay on Carolina Bays because they're complicated enough.
Yeah, and these really belong with Carolina Bays. But, 90%, more than 90% are of coastal plain counties.
Okay. So are they just alike in the plants that are growing in them?
No. They are, they can be quite different. And so that brings up, we want to talk about Carolina Bays, you invariably have to talk about different kinds. And they can, as far as the geology goes, they can be broken into two more or less major groups, that is based upon what the substrate is for them. So in the
you mean what the bottom is?
Right.
What
makes up that soil?
Uh-huh.
So that the in South Carolina, again, and basically all of North Carolina, the bays of the PD region tend to be what we call peat-based. That is, the soil is made up of rotted vegetation, peat, basically.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And the other bays, and there are more of these other kinds of bays throughout this state, would be what we call clay-based. And there are different kinds of clays in different layers that make up those bays. This is a generalization.
So if we were looking like in Calhoun County, we'd find mostly one type?
Mostly clay-based.
Okay.
And then farther, you know, towards the Savannah River, they're clay-based.
All right.
Every
okay.
now and then you could find one that seems to have more peat in it.
And is that because of what the typical soils were in those areas, you suppose?
It gets complicated. And, of course, we were talking about this early origin of sand moving things around. Well, we're talking now about the developing soil much after that.
Oh.
So that, like I said, that the substrate would have a lot to do with the resultant plant communities that would be inside of a bay. So you wonder, well, what's inside this bay?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't always be the same kind of community. so we might just list the sorts of communities that you could find.
And you're going to tell us if they are the peat or the clay base.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
And generally, as an old soldier of Carolina Bays, walking into one of these things is not necessarily an easy prospect.
Mm-hmm.
And that most of the bays, whatever their types, would be surrounded by a pretty dense vegetation layer of shrubs, a very thick shrub thicket with lots of smilax. And,
and let's tell them that that is sometimes called a chainy briar, and for good cause.
And
it'll catch you and hold you and scratch you
and sometimes
up.
Called blaspheme vine.
Because it's going to make you say words you shouldn't
That's
say.
That's right. And so, but this sort of a foreboding layer or thicket of vegetation commonly surrounds these bays.
So it's almost like Sleeping Beauty surrounded by these, by the that impenetrable forest to get
That's
inside
right.
and find the delights of the varied plant life.
If you wanted to be on the inside of that bay for whatever reason, you really had to want it.
Okay.
So,
all right, we've made it through.
Okay, so we can talk about some of the types of vegetation that you would find. So the first one to talk about, I think, would be perfect example in Horry County,
mm-hmm.
and there's several in Dillon County and Marlboro, which would be called a Pocosin Bay.
Pocosin?
Pocosin.
All right.
And that's an old word. Apparently, the Indian Native Americans came up with this word, and it means swamp on a hill.
My word.
And the idea is that a Pocosin would be a community dominated by either tall or low shrubs, very thick.
Ooh.
And again, it's almost as though that surrounding shrub layer never went away.
Oh.
So imagine having to go through a very, very thick layer of shrubs,
mm-hmm.
again, with these flammable shrubby species, many of which are in the rhododendron family. And then also lots of different species of hollies.
My word.
Some evergreen and some deciduous.
And those are very flammable plants.
They are.
Typically.
And again, the smilax vine is there too. Now, these Pocosins can be quite fascinating. And there are some very interesting herbaceous species that grow in them. And shrubby species too.
Now, we're in a clay-based at this point?
That's right.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. That would be peat-based.
Oh, we're peat-based.
Yeah, peat-based bays, generally dominated by these Pocosins.
Huh.
Now, because they are dominated by these shrubby species with flammable leaves, you might expect that fires go through them every now and then.
I bet they do.
And sure enough, when one of these places would catch on fire because of a lightning strike mm-hmm. or whatever reason, boom. I mean, it burns like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the fires generally don't last too long. Of course, there would be residual fire afterward. But the fire would be very important, especially if it burned into the peat. And, of course, that could make things different, too, destroying lots of the vegetation. But typically, these Pocosin species respond positively to fire so that they're going to quickly resprout and produce another Pocosin that might even be thicker than the one before.
So is this going to also keep down large trees and things that might shade them out?
Correct. The trees that would be in a Pocosin, a well-developed Pocosin ecosystem, would probably be limited to such things as loblolly bay, which I know you've seen it.
Sure.
It's a common plant in the, well, not it's not everywhere, but Loblolly Bay is a gorgeous plant.
Gordonia
laciantus.
Camellia-like flower almost.
That's right. As well as Red Bay, which usually doesn't get to be tree-sized, but it can. And those are the ones that are, like, very unfortunately losing it because of the introduced pathogen that's destroying lots of the red bays.
We had a beautiful, big, big red bay on the dam at Swan Lake, which has been lost to that imported...
A beetle, an insect.
Asian beetle that, lays its eggs in them.
It's a mess.
Yeah, the fungus that's associated with them, ambrosia beetle, the fungus that's associated with them, stops up the plant's vascular system, and there's nothing we can do about it.
But anyway, the three kinds of bays, the Loblolly Bay, Red Bay, and the third one is Sweet Bay. All of these are capable of being tree-sized individuals.
Sweet Bay, of course, one of our kind of semi-deciduous magnolias and just the sweetest magnolia of all in my book. I love it dearly.
Our native Magnolia virginiana.
Yeah.
But now a fourth tree species that could be there would be the gorgeous, gorgeous pond pine.
Pond pine.
Which is a species of Pinus. And, of course, it's Pinus serotina.
Oh.
And this is a native species, too.
And serotina, I think, means tardy.
Right.
And so does that mean that it germinates, seeds come up late or something? Or
one thing
pine
about
cones
it,
are
of,
late?
Its, of its tardiness or lateness is that it keeps its pine cones on the branches for years.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's nice if you've been spent half your life picking up pine cones like I have.
Yeah, and they're beautiful little pine cones with a very characteristic top shape.
Yeah.
If anybody remembers what a top,
is. I know. Spin the top, I know.
But the thing about pond pine and these other species is, as I said, they resprout readily after a fire.
The pine can too?
Oh, sure. And it's got a very special kind of... taking care of itself after a fire, and that after all the needles are burned off, it will make new needles directly on the trunk of the tree.
No.
No other pine species will do that.
Golly Pete, that's fascinating.
And, of course, it can start branching again and survive these fires, as long as they're not so hot that the entire plant is destroyed.
Wow, that must be the funniest looking thing in the world.
They're very bushy looking. They look like... porcupine trees.
So, and I'm sure that, as you said, I mean, it used to be we had natural fires all the time coming through, and then sometimes the indigenous people would use fire, I believe, also.
For one thing, to drive game out of the forest so they could be hunted.
Okay.
So we're still talking about these pocosins, which really can be beautiful, even though they're hard to deal with. But those fires that I mentioned a minute ago, if they do burn deeply and hot enough, they can burn out portions of the peat, making a hole, which might end up being filled with water.
Whoa.
So you could have a small pond.
Well, that is a good time for us to end this, and we'll come back and find out about a pond. Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you, Amanda.